back into the game on Tuscaloosa Sports Authority 99.1 WDGM. We have spent a lot of time talking with former players this week, and tonight is no different. Reggie Grimes earlier, and right now we're visiting with a linebacker, an All-American at the University of Alabama, a first-round draft pick, EJ Jr. joins us via the telephone. EJ, welcome to Tuscaloosa. I hope you're doing well.
I'm blessed and highly favored. I'm doing. It's all good.
EJ, I know what you're doing, but I want the fans to hear what EJ Jr. is up to these days.
Well, currently I serve as the head football coach at Central State University. Been here for the last four seasons. Was brought here by Kellen Winslow, who is no longer here, and we've had a chance to do some good things. We want to get better. Been to Tuscaloosa a couple of times because we play Stillman University, which is just down the street. We'll play them this year down there. But looking forward to trying to improve what we're going to do, moving to a new conference in the SIAC, and looking forward to the challenges of 2013.
Absolutely. Do you take a lot that you learned as a player under Coach Bryant into your coaching habits today?
I think a lot of what Coach Bryant did, a lot of what Don Shula did, a lot of the things I learned from Gene Stallings, as well as Coach Sylvester Croom, Jeff Rousey, Mal Moore, Bill Oliver, I put all that into what I try to teach these young men, because basically as a head football coach, you never get to see that perspective as a player, but then when you get older and you start teaching, you understood what Coach Bryant and the coaching staff at Alabama was teaching us. So you become a mentor, a father figure, a philosopher. Those things that I've said about Coach Bryant are the things that I try to become and do those things trying to teach these young men now.
You look back at your linebacker days, and no doubt we remember those in Tuscaloosa. You were a first-round draft pick early in the first round. How hard is it as a player to handle the success of being an All-American and then being an early selection in the National Football League draft?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, the biggest pressure to me was not playing the game, was trying to handle everything that came with it. You have friends who were your friends because of what you were, not who you were. You know, everybody's trying to tell you how to invest your money. Everybody's trying to tell you where to live, how to spend your money. And it becomes, you know, friends that you've never seen before, or had family members that you never have been in touch with, now come out of the woodwork. So it's now trying to handle your financial affairs and understanding that football on this level is a business. It's a job. It's not where you go to class and everything is kind of formatted for you, where you have a regiment. The NFL becomes your business. You are the CEO, and you are running that corporation.
EJ, as we look at back-to-back national titles that you won here in Tuscaloosa, and Alabama just experiencing that, winning back-to-back national titles, how hard is that for a team to win one and then repeat, because you know that bullseye and the target on the back of your shoulder pads is much larger?
Well, when we were under Coach Bryant, it was difficult and, in a sense, easy, because every class that was before you, and Coach Saban, I'm sure, did the same thing with his kid. This is a new class. This is not the same team that was here last year. Those seniors are gone. You got freshmen who are now part of your mix. The chemistry has changed. But the focus is, first of all, winning your conference, winning each game 1 week at a time, and the ultimate goal is to win the national championship. You have that, but I'd rather be the chasee than the chaser, because you can't look back. You have to continue to improve yourself, and I think we were more competitive against ourselves. And it showed, because my senior year, we ended up losing two games after winning those two national championship games, and we felt like we were complete failures, because we hadn't lost two games in a season in my career at Alabama. So there was a chance to win a third national championship, and we actually got screwed out of the third one my freshman year when they jumped Texas from fifth to first. So the ideology, the work ethic, it changed. I don't think Coach Bryant let us get complacent. None of the coaches let us get complacent. I think we were hungrier to outdo the class that was before us, and that was part of the things that kept driving us.
Being a current college coach, I think you can probably go back and look at those 70s. Using a Bible terminology, iron sharpens iron, did you feel that way? Because you're going up against quality players. You're going up against fellow All-Americans and All-Stars in the Southeastern Conference. Looking back at your days here, did you feel like that accomplished?
Yes, I think so, because when you look at the kids that we played against, you know, I think about the guys that I played against. I look at the Frank Warrens. I look at the Charles Alexanders. I look at the Herschel Walkers, the quarterback from Mississippi State, James Bonds, you know, Byron Franklin, William Edge. Those guys were good. I don't care how good Alabama was. Those people we played against every Saturday in the SEC, and it hasn't changed since we left, were good. You were playing against some of the best competitions every week, and you did not want to be the one to lose. And I think they felt the same thing on the other side of the ball. They wanted to play against the best. So when I looked at my senior year, and Sylvester Croom mentioned to me my freshman year, he says, I keep playing the way that I was playing, I'd be the number one draft choice. I said, of what? I was thinking the Army. But, you know, draft choice in the NFL. And my targets, the people that I was trying to outdo, was Hugh Green and Lyman White from LSU. Lyman White was a heck of a defensive end coming out, and we were playing the same position. So I wanted to try, first of all, outdo him, but I wanted to outdo Hugh Green. And all of a sudden, this guy that nobody heard of named Lawrence Taylor comes out of nowhere and becomes the number one linebacker chosen. But, you know, that was to compete.
We're talking with EJ Jr., as we mentioned, a first-round selectee, fourth overall back in 1981. He was an All-American at the University of Alabama. And EJ, I look back, what was a memory of your college days? You know, you talk about the coaches, you can talk about Coach Bryant, but what was unique? Maybe that story that you tell your grandkids 20 years from now, this is what happened in Tuscaloosa for the University of Alabama.
Wow. Ooh, there's so many stories you could go back to. I guess the biggest one is when I actually got a chance to go from being a second-team defensive player to becoming that starting defensive end. Even my mother tells me the story. The reason why she can tell me the story, she was there and I didn't know it. Coach Bryant was going to move me to the first defensive end. We're getting ready to play Vanderbilt. I'm wearing a blue jersey on the practice field, and that's all reconfigured now because they got the indoor facility almost where we used to practice. And she was standing in the tunnel. Well, Coach Bryant only comes out of that tower for three reasons. And he was coming out of that tower pretty quick that day. And I looked. Now, the first thing you do is look to the corner and see if there's a dignitary coming on the campus. Because if you see that limo sitting over there, oh, okay, there's a dignitary. We're safe. There was no limo. Second one is somebody's hurt. I'm looking on the turf field where the Reds and the HHs, which we call our first team offense and first team defense, to see if somebody was hurt. Nobody was on the ground. I didn't see Coach Goose Tree. I was like, okay. It was too early for practice to be over. So the only reason that he comes out of that tower after those three matters is he's about to chew somebody out. And he came off that tower and he started coming over to the practice field where the second team defense and second team offense was going at it. And he's walking directly to me and I'm like, I'm about to get chewed out. And I had a lump in my throat and he says, Junior, grab a white jersey and go over there with the first team defense. And I was stunned. I was like, sir? He says, doggone it. And he didn't use those words. I said, go get a white jersey and go with the first team defense. And I started to sprint. And before I can even take my fifth step, he chewed out John Knox all the way up and all the way down. And my mother told me the story. I didn't know that he had called her to tell her he was going to move me to first team defense that day. And she couldn't be on the field because he didn't allow people on the field if they weren't related to football. But she told me that she was there and described it to a T. I said, I never told you this story. She says, that's because I was there. So I would think that's the one thing that was passed down, that my mother actually got a chance to see me move up the first team defense and actually go home to play against Vanderbilt in Nashville, Tennessee that weekend. And we won that game, even though I'm playing against former teammates from Maplewood High School. But it was a great feeling, and that was part of my Alabama experience. I mean, we won national championships. Those things always ring true. Martin Lyons and the famous – I think you better throw it on that famous goal line stand sticks in my mind as well.
Did you hear him say that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, it was 4th and inches, and he says, I think you better pass. And
what was the reaction from the Penn State side?
I really don't think they were paying him too much mind. I really don't. They were Joe Paterno and that group were determined that they can run the football against Alabama. It was brute force against brute force. Marty Lyon comes back to the huddle. He says, "Gentlemen, this is nothing but an old-fashioned gut check." And that's what we remember, because those spring practices, we always talked about gut checks. And I had gone through a brutal one, and I think I made my name in one of those gut checks, and I knew what it was all, what that meant. So it came down to when he mentioned it, he says, it's nothing but an old-fashioned gut check. In other words, whatever you have left in your tank, you better leave it on the field right now.
You're a college coach, and you and I were talking about this earlier today. Many folks talk about the X's and O's, and we see that materialize on Saturday afternoon. But some of us don't really understand what's it like to be a coach off the field and to mentor players. Can you help us understand that a little bit more?
Well, the biggest job, and when you look at being the head coach, which is kind of the most interesting position to be in, because you're not really a coach. You're more of you're more like the general manager. You oversee what the operations of the football team. You would love to have more hands-on duties when it comes to teaching and showing guys how to do things, but you hire coaches to do those things. But you're a mentor. I'm considered the granddad because I'm the oldest coach on my staff right now. But you're a father figure. You're a mentor. You're a teacher. Anything that happens with a player on and off the field, you handle those problems. When I went to the University of Alabama, even though I have a mother and a father, they're still living. My father just turned 81 this past week. My mother's still going very strong. Coach Bryant was my father figure away from home. You know, Coach Kroon was my personal father, you know, because he had the hands-on trainer of me every day. So if there was an issue, we took it to Coach Kroon. We took it to Coach Rouser. We took it to Mal Moore. We took it to Coach Oliver. We even took it to Coach Bryant. If we needed to sit down, he would take the time out for his players. I mean, for 1 minute from the time that you met with his secretary, you were in his office. Now, sometimes you might not want to hear what he had to say. But everything that coach was trying to teach you was along the same lines as building character, discipline. You know, what would your mama say? What would your papa say, as Coach Bryant would say? And he was trying to basically instill those things in us. Did we make mistakes? We made a lot of mistakes. But they handled it and showed us how to become men. He taught us to be accountable. He taught us to be credible. He taught us to be, you know, accessible. These things were instilled, and these are a lot of the characters that I try to instill in our players now. Because I know you're going to make mistakes. You're a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid coming out of high school. This is the first time you've been away from your mothers and fathers. A lot of these kids have single parents. We are the fathers. We are the uncles. We are the grandfathers to these kids. We mentor them. We try to teach them from right from wrong. When they make a mistake, yes, we chew them out. And when they do right, we love them up. I put what I call the do-right rules, and I have very few rules, but they're followed, how to be on time. So when a young man makes a mistake, you know, the first thing, like we were with Coach Bryant, be honest. Tell me so I know what I'm dealing with. Once we identify what we need to do, we kind of talk about it. I have to, you know, let my athletic director know what's going on so he doesn't get blindsided, and he'll handle it with the authorities that he needs to go before. But it is a ongoing. We see these kids more than professors do. On a daily basis, I will see my players probably 4 of those hours during the day, be it a workout, be it a practice, be it study hall. I see those players. And they see them more. We see them more than the professors do. We see them more than their dorms do. So you have that constant contact to try to keep. You try to teach them to do right, but it's an ongoing job and it's a daily job.
You know, many people may or may not know, but EJ Jr. is a ordained minister and represents our Savior Christ, Jesus Christ. And Coach, I just maybe a quick question: are you able to integrate your faith, being a head coach there? Are you able to use the skills from the Bible to apply to your football team and to make them successful on Saturday?
All the time. I mean, it's ironic that you asked that question. My ministry is related to football. My church has never been in four walls. And a lot of the things that I teach our daily that can be found in Scripture. Now, you know, playing the games is how we go about playing the games could be very similar to Joshua's plight into tearing down walls, you know, the four walls of Jericho, your belief, your faith. A lot of times I've asked the players, and I brought this up in meetings, I says, am I Moses or am I Joshua? Because it's been a trying time here at Central State University. And my thought is, am I leading you to the promised land, or I'm the one who takes you into the promised land? So there's a lot of spiritual-based guidance. We have Bible studies. The coaches have Bible studies with me on Thursday, and we have outside pastors who have come in and done those things for us and this football team. I have some members on staff who basically have a very deep spiritual relationship with Jesus, and they've done our chapels. We have chapels before the game, and we handle it ourselves unless we have Pastor Brian, who's from Grace Baptist down the street, do it. We go to various churches, so there are very few times that I have a player who may not be of the belief, and I can respect that. I will tell them this is, and I tell them and their parents that beforehand. I'm not trying to force my beliefs on them, but I want them to be open to just hear and maybe just plant a seed. I still let them make their own choices. And it's helped our team immensely a lot, and I think God has a hand in a lot of the things that I've done, and he's already pre-ordered my steps, and hopefully maybe he'll move me up to bigger and some greater things.
Coach, I always appreciate you being part of our show here in Tuscaloosa. I know the folks always enjoy hearing what EJ Jr. is up to these days. Thanks so much for connecting with us here in T-Town and being a part of our show tonight.
Thank you, and you be blessed.